Agenda item number four, report and possible discussion on pension advisory report by the Bogdan Group by Richard Coleman, Bogdan representative. Richard?
Thank you. I believe you have in front of you the executive summary for the quarter ending March 31st. And on page one, we have the portfolio walkthrough that we're doing on a year-to-date basis. We started the year with $19.9 million in the fund. No contributions, distributions of $400,000. Fees were less rounding than to make it into the $100,000 category. We had $100,000 of income and $100,000 of asset appreciation for the quarter. And wound up March 31 with $19.6 million in claim.
And that's the difference. We had 18.7 February, so the market didn't cover 700,000 just in one month.
Right. And there's also been a further, I believe, growth over this last 2 months. So. And especially in one area that we'll get to here in a few minutes. On page two, we have a number of targets that we're trying to achieve, and one of them is to exceed a benchmark on a net return basis as we move through the investment period. Pretty much matched it for the quarter. Slightly below the 1 year, we're 1% below for 3 years, and that's why it's highlighted. 5 years, 80 basis points below, and since inception, which is the farthest back that we could gather information on the plan, 50 basis points. So we haven't quite achieved that. It was a very tough time frame, and the major reason for that, I believe, as you know, are our energy infrastructure assets that had a significant downdraft during 2015, continued into the first quarter of 2016. But when we get the, and hey, I better knock on wood, because this quarter to date, energy infrastructure is up like 20% over the time frame as of last Thursday. The domestic equity managers exceeded their benchmarks for the quarter, but not for the trailing 12 months. The international equity manager exceeded their benchmark, and as I said earlier, energy infrastructure MLPs were a drag on the total fund performance. Fixed income for the quarter fell short of the benchmark because we're kind of in intermediate bonds. There was a significant, if you will, run-up in the overall return in fixed income as you were further out in duration. Quite frankly, I think that's where all the risk is in the market right now. Any type of down or rise in interest rates will have negative impacts on fixed income. Our fixed income, because of this more stability that we've put into it, has exceeded the benchmark returns for 3 and 5 years. On page three, we have a goal to return net of fees, the actuarial required return of 6.5% over the 5 year period, which we did not achieve. We had a net return of 4.5%. Once again, because of primarily the infrastructure MLPs. Goal number two, to be in the top 50% compared to the peer median. We did not achieve that either. We were below average, and here again, that was purely a result of the allocation to energy. And I believe that that's correcting itself in the current environment.
When you say correcting itself in the current environment, just because of what?
if you know her well.
Just because of the price of oil?
A big part of the whole initial setback was that we ran down below $30.
Sure.
And running down below $30 was going to be a very, very difficult situation in the oil patch. I was at a economics conference about a month ago, and at $50 a barrel, there's a lot of stability in the U.S. oil program. You get up above that, then there's going to be more, you know, drilling and production that's going to occur. And the other thing that was brought out during that conference was that for the Saudis to maintain their overall payments into infrastructure and their economy, they need the price of oil to be up in the $70 range.
You know, there's a lot of opinions out there.
Oh, I know.
Iran's influence on it.
Right.
How long the Saudis will take it in the shorts. So how are we adjusting this based on, I guess, on what y'all think it's going to do?
Well, we're in the, like I say, we're in the infrastructure area.
Right.
And quite frankly, they still have to store and transport the petroleum and the gas. The pipelines have, continued to have significant amount of usage. There's been a little bit of a slowdown in new projects, and I think that new project area is what was the major concern. There's a lot of money flowing into the private debt space with these focus on providing, if you will, funds for the energy infrastructure area. So I think that that the stability is beginning to occur there.
I'm going to show my ignorance, I guess. But can someone tell me, why do we import oil? Is it, we have heavy crude, do we need the light crude from the Middle East? Or we got contracts that are still in place that still have to be fulfilled?
What, well,
I mean, if we're self-sufficient in energy, why are we importing?
We don't make enough.
Well, we were a net exporter for a while, which was part of the reason for all of
the grades of oil, typically.
Heavy versus light crude.
But I believe there's 80 million barrels a day in use. Is that right? Yeah. We use about 20. We only produce about 10, our high was about 10 or 11. That's the main reason. We're not driving Teslas yet.
Or is there something preventing us from taxing imported oil?
No, it's an interesting idea.
Federal law.
Just help our economy, help our energy sector.
I just out there.
Well,
I don't know. Thank you. Just confusing.
Well, the rest of the world has much higher taxes on petroleum than we do.
Yeah, I've been to Europe.
Yeah, so have I. And when you're paying $4 a liter, that was a little bit like, it keeps clicking over, and then you realize that it, takes, like, I don't know, 80 liters to fill the thing, and you go, whoa, what happened here?
And that's why a lot of those cars are little bitty things.
Like my little Fiat. Yeah.
Is that your Fiat out there?
Yeah.
All right.
On page 4, is a look at asset allocation. We're over allocated in large cap equity, primarily because of the under allocation, if you will, in private equity. If we ever decide to do private equity, the funding for that would come out of the large cap equity. We're pretty much on a little bit over, if you will, with mid-cap equity, pretty close on international equity, and below in fixed income. And we have an agenda item, we'll talk about that later, and trying to rebalance that. Infrastructure MLPs, we're slightly below, but that's primarily because of the rundown in infrastructure MLPs during 2015 and the first quarter of this year. Real estate has been our best performing asset class, and so that's the pure reason why it's got a little bit higher allocation right now. Cash equivalents, we're a little bit over at that particular point in time, but over the last couple of months, that's been used to pay benefits, and we'll be, you know, drawn down because of that. Any questions on allocation? I put a couple of pages in here on the overall fee impact of the fund. And as of the end of December, we were paying an estimated annual fee of $171,000. And that came out to be composed of a number of different things that were going on. We had mostly all active managed funds, and one of the funds that we had in there as of year end was a fund that had rather high fees, the Royce Premier Fund, which is no longer with us. So if we go to page 6, the estimated annual fee now is $159,000, so a significant drop in fees, and hopefully an improvement in performance by replacing Royce Premier Fund over that time frame with Diamond Hill and with the Vanguard, the Vanguard Mid Cap Index.
Excuse me, but can you remind me what, as a percentage, what y'all charge us? I know the totals that we saw. What is the charge that?
Well, let's say.
I think sometimes we just focus on these, and it's kind of both.
Well, we're involved. Yeah, we're involved. That's our fee's in there.
Okay, your fee is in that number.
Yes, our fee is in that number. It's about 20% of that number.
Okay. Okay, I was just curious.
This does not include our other fees for actuarial, Wells Fargo.
Yeah, it does.
It does include them too? How did you allocate that?
This particular slide does not include that.
That's part of the $80,000 that you saw in Wells Fargo.
Yeah, you're right. This does not include Wells Fargo in the actuary because it's not based on portfolio value.
Right.
On page 7, a look at the overall return from the various asset classes. As we saw earlier, over the last 5 years, we've had a net return of 4.7% versus our benchmark of 5.5. On a gross basis, we were up to about 4.9 instead of the 4.7. Total equity was below the benchmark, 5.9 versus 7.4. One of the major reasons for that was a fund that was, or a manager that was terminated a couple of years ago and replaced with the current lineup, and also more recently the replacement of the Royce Premier Fund. Total domestic equity was up 7.5% versus 10.5% target. International equity had a good run over the last 5 years, although 1.7% is not a lot of performance relative to other managers in the equity space. They did very, very well and also exceeded the index over that time frame by almost 1%. Total fixed income 3.8% versus 3.1 benchmark, which is very good performance in the fixed income area. Once again, I say I think that's where most of the forward-looking risk lies from two perspectives. One, rising interest rate environment, but two, even if there was no rising interest rate environment, that's a significant drag on the return that we need to achieve. Total MLPs, big, if you will, sell-off in 2015, which puts us from the standpoint of since inception of putting the MLPs in, which was almost 4 years ago. From the standpoint of this, 5.5% negative return versus 1.6% negative for the index.
Richard, I thought we were looking at the trust policy. I thought it's 6.5 net. Isn't that
right?
Right. Well, this is showing 5.53.
No, this is what the domestic market, international market, and bond funds would have given us. That's the benchmark versus what's going on. Now we have this flat 6.5 that we're trying to achieve also.
Right.
But one of the things we're trying to get our managers to achieve is do better than the market.
Sure.
You can't, I mean, it's, the 6.5 is flat now.
How would you grade yourself this year, Richard?
Ah, that's a good question. If I had a crystal ball, I would say, we did terribly, but without the crystal ball, I think that, it's been a tough market, and I don't know how else to put it. I do think that forward-looking, we're really in a good position. This last year has been a tough year on us. We've done well in the international space, in the fixed income space, kind of not quite so well in the domestic equity. We've had a couple of opportunities to move into some alternative assets that hasn't occurred, which I think would have added significant value to the fund and stability. All in all, I wish I could have foreseen a big sell-off in infrastructure, but didn't. So without the sell-off in infrastructure, I think very, very good, but with the structure, the sell-off, I don't think it's been very good for the total fund.
Richard, BBH continues to underperform the S&P significantly. What's its problem?
BBH long-term, and we've got some data, or I sent some other data out on that. We don't have it in this particular book. But if you go back, longer term, they're still way above their peer group and well above the average. The problem is we got into them when their particular strategy rolled a little bit out of favor. I think they're still a very good fund, and I think they're going to recover. But BBH definitely, I guess we're on a different page now.
You look on page 9?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
But before we leave page 7, the MLPs, the energy infrastructure, like I said, over this quarter to date is up like 20%, which brings it up to approximately 10% on a year-to-date basis, which quite frankly would put it in the top, one of the top performing asset classes on a year-to-date basis. Knock on wood, hopefully, we maintain that type of run through the end of June. We're going to try and do a flash report on all of that, but the Wells Fargo statements are not available until, I think, this coming Wednesday or so. And on page nine, looking at the various managers, the BBH Core Select had a good quarter, up 2.1% versus the index of 1.4. Very, very good recovery. 1 year below the index, but very close to the top quartile performance of other large cap managers. The 3 year time frame, because of what happened in 2000, primarily 2015, they're significantly below the index and below other cap managers at that particular point in time. And since our inception, definitely below the index by about 4%. Like I say, I really think that their strategy will pay off over the long term. But here, right now, they've been a little bit of out of phase with the overall market. Diamond Hill, which is a new manager in the fund, not been on a full quarter, so we don't have information on performance for that time frame. And the Vanguard Mid-Cap Core, also no longer are no information for the quarter because they've not been on for a full 3 months. International equity, tremendous return from the standpoint of relative to other managers, one half of 1%, which is in the ninth percentile. Very high compared to other managers, continues high against other managers out over all time frames, but the international market is, as you know, has been a tough place for total return. For the 3 years, they're up 1% versus 0.8% for the market, and for the 5 years, up 1.7 versus 0.8 for the market. Compared to their benchmark, they've done well. Compared to other international managers, they've done well. On an absolute return basis, international securities have lagged. Total fixed income. Because we had lower duration, we didn't participate in the big, if you will, return out of the first quarter. As I remember looking at that, the first quarter return was a return in excess of the coupon of the market. So you got a full year's worth of return all in one quarter, which quite frankly was a result of interest rates moving down a little bit. That puts a lot more, if you will, pressure on the market moving forward. There's this overhang of what's going to happen with the Fed when they start to raise interest rates, what's going to happen to the bond market. I think, quite frankly, if you're in core bonds or longer dated securities, it's going to be a very, very tough time.
What is your guess about interest rates in the next 3 months?
3 months?
Not this month.
Well,
25 basis points.
I don't think there's going to be any change for a little while. But basically, the latest thing you hear is the Fed is going to sit on the sidelines with the latest data that came in to them. I don't know. The only thing is it's a mathematical game. And in that mathematical game, if interest rates are not if, but when interest rates start to rise, because they will, then bonds are going to really have a problem. I was telling somebody the other day, I was around on your side of the table when we had a rising interest rate environment back in the 1970s, and it was painful. We looked at our bond portfolios being worth 70 cents on the dollar. And no matter how good the companies were doing or how good the economy was doing, the bonds were valued at 70 cents on the dollar. So you were looking at either holding them for the next 20 years and getting your coupon out of it, or selling it and taking an immediate loss and finding something else to put it in. It was a tough time.
The possibility of the British leaving the European Union, is that
there is a possibility.
Well, Obama told them they shouldn't do it.
Well, I agree with him. I don't think they should do it. I mean, they are part of it from the standpoint of all of the everything other than the euro, and they maintain the British pound, the pound sterling, the euro is where everybody else has moved to the euro. They have stayed out of the euro. I would think it would cause a lot more problems in Britain for them to do that. But who knows? I mean, you've got the same thing here. Who knows what's going to happen with what election? You know? Surprises me, quite frankly, how the two parties have filtered down to where they are now for the presidential election. I'm like, wow.
All right, is there anything else on that, Richard?
Just one. And again, I don't want to beat the dog to death, but our largest holding is BBH, $6.5 million. It's got the largest loss of 4 basis points since we've owned it for the last 3 years. It's kicking our rear.
In dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big influence on the. I mean, if that wasn't off 4 basis points, it just met its index. We'd be in a whole lot better shape than we are. I'm not going to beat a dead dog to death, but they have really hurt us.
They have. And it may be a result of all of the, you know, upswing they had when they were outperforming like crazy when we hired them. The problem is, and maybe... something to think about when we're going to do something in the future is just, hiring a manager that's doing very, very well at the time may not be the best deal because they all run in a cycle. They never remain on top. The key is over long periods of time, how well have they done? And over long periods of time, BBH has done very, very well. So I think, you know, to try and say, well, now I'm going to change and I'm going to go to somebody else because they've been doing so well, is probably not a good
thing. And I'm not suggesting that. I'm just observation. They have really.
Well, they have. I mean, they definitely have. And it hurts. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that they're a quality manager, and that their particular strategy is going to come back into focus. One of the things that has happened over last year, which was part of their problem, if you notice this year, all of a sudden they moved up in their relative ranking and in their absolute return versus the index. Over the last year, a lot of lower, if you want to call it, quality securities moved to the top of the heap. This latest quarter has been a shift of that back to higher quality. I think that higher quality type stuff is what BBH owns.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.